The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
And in this corner, weighing in with his take on current events, the smarty of the party, the mighty Mike from the right, the heavyweight of debate, the man who's in cahoots with the grassroots, the broadcaster master, Jimmy Sangenberger.
Saturday night is always all right for the Jimmy Sangenberger Show right here on News Talk 710 KNUS. And it is indeed, as always, such a pleasure and a privilege to be with you. Once again, thanks for joining us. By the way, if you want to join into the festivities 24/7, 365... you can tweet at me, at Sang Center, that's Sang with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter. You can also text in, you can also email me via the 710 KNUS website on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show page, or log on to my website, jimmysangenberger.com, go to the contact page and shoot me a message there. Remember, there's no A, there's no I, there's no U in Sangenberger. It's all E's all the time. Once you know that, Sangenberger is easy. And, of course, you can follow me on Facebook for Jimmy Sangenberger Media Personality, facebook.com/Jimmy Sangenberger Pro. And, by the way, separate from politics, I created a new Facebook page I hope you will check out and like. Jimmy Jr., search Jimmy Jr. Harmonica. You can do Jimmy Jr. Freebird. I've been gigging out and about, enjoying the opportunity to play, and you can check out some of those gigs. I'll be posting video, more, and so forth at Jimmy Jr. One of the great ones was Jimmy Jr. Freebird. We did that last weekend with the Lo Becker band that I'm the lead harmonica player for. So be sure to check it out, Jimmy Jr. Harmonica. Sometimes it's a little difficult to find it because it's a new page, but you know what to do, and I strongly ask you to follow me there. You can keep up with my musical exploits as well. All right, great show for you tonight in an hour. I'm excited. 6 o'clock, you have to meet Josh Lown. Josh is a musician. I've played with him before when I ran my nonprofit Liberty Day Institute in the Millennial Policy Center. I put together a few different events for which we had live music, and Josh was the bass player. Well, Josh, when I first met him in 2017, he didn't like Trump, and he was a big Bernie guy. In fact, he was a 2016 delegate to the DNC. Well, Josh Lown has had an epiphany, a 180-degree turn. He is vehemently, strongly, potently, full-throatedly, unequivocally, without any doubt, pro-Trump. 2016 Bernie delegate and musician Josh Lown voting for Donald Trump. Why? What is it that has caused him to flip from Bernie and even sort of turn on Bernie to become very pro-Trump? When I first learned from him that he was now a Trump guy, I was like, whoa, what in the world? You have to hear this conversation with Josh Lown in this next hour, first segment of the 6 o'clock hour. Do not miss it. At the bottom of this hour, look, Colorado is on fire right now. Our state is ablaze, and it is tragic what we are seeing in terms of the devastation. And there are some on the left who will say these forest fires, the wildfires that we are seeing in Colorado, are a direct result of climate change. But is this true, or is it really a matter of forest management? Bad forest management. Well, certainly, the former is not true. It's not climate change that is the problem here. It is the latter. Bad forest management, particularly in our national and state-owned parks. We're going to talk with climatologist extraordinaire Dr. Patrick J. Michaels of the Competitive Enterprise Institute and Keith Nobles, author of the novel Our Dogs Did Not Bark, a politically incorrect dystopian tale, who is an avid outdoorsman. It seems like every week, without fail, Keith Nobles is camping. And he has noticed a lot of changes over the past decade or so, especially in how our forests are being handled. So we're going to get a perspective of a climatologist who actually is the past president of the American Association of State Climatologists, who understands this issue of climate change in a way that I think is very important because he's reasonable about it. He's what he calls a lukewarm, recognizing that the climate is changing, and it has always changed. Human beings right now are contributing to climate change, but it's not the end of the world. And in fact, there are some positive things to climate change. But anyway, he's a go-to guy for me here on this program when it comes to wanting to get to the science of climate change. We're going to get the scientific view from Dr. Michaels, and then also simultaneously, so not then, simultaneously, we will get Keith Noble's perspective on what has changed on the ground in Colorado that has helped contribute to the gravity and the size and scope and the destruction of these wildfires in our beautiful state. You do not want to miss that conversation coming up. We'll also talk about what's going on with Hunter Biden and that whole saga with Max McGuire of conservative-daily.com and the Conservative Daily podcast, and lots more coming up tonight here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. But as we often like to do in this first segment, I want to begin with a bonus bumper. This is a cool tune by the band of Heathens called Hurricane. Want to give you a little taste as we kick things off tonight here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show.
Miles on the Gulf Stream, I hear the south wind moan. The bridge is getting lower, the shrimp boat's coming home. The old man down in the quarter slowly turns his head, takes a sip from his whiskey bottle, and this is what he said. I was born in the rain on the Ponce train underneath the Louisiana moon. I don't mind the strain of a hurricane. They come around every June. The high black water, a devil's daughter. She's hot, she's cold, and she's mean. But nobody taught her it takes a lot of water to wash away New Orleans. Came down from Chicago, he gonna set that levee right. He says it needs to be at least 3 feet higher, it won't make it through the night. But the old man down in the quarter, he said, don't you listen to that boy. The water be down by the morning, and he'll be back to Illinois. Train underneath the Louisiana moon. I don't mind.
song, I think. The sound, the tone of the music definitely fits the idea of a hurricane that is coming. And folks, look, we cannot allow a hurricane to hit our country on November 4th. That is to say, when Election Day comes on November 3rd, we need to win so that on November 4th, we don't have a hurricane that is hitting upon us, because the revelation is, nope, we didn't succeed. We weren't victorious. Now, the reality is that we shouldn't dismiss the polls outright like 2016, because there are a lot of dynamics in play, and there is reason to think that Trump has a very tough race. We shouldn't look just at 2016 and say, oh, polls were wrong, therefore Donald Trump is going to have it in the bag this time, because the polls must be wrong. Should we take the polls at face value and say, oh my gosh, look what's going on? This means Donald Trump is going to get crushed. We have no chance in hell. Absolutely not. It just means we shouldn't dismiss the polls, and we have to recognize that, especially with all the early voting that is happening across the country, that it could in fact be a tough election year for Republicans across the country. It could also be a fine year. 2020 is very weird. It's a strange, strange animal. So we'll see what happens ultimately. But my point is simply that we should not rest on our laurels. Republicans anywhere in the country should not rest on their laurels, because the polls in 2016 were so off. And because Joe Biden, well, he's hardly even there. We don't have to be concerned about what Joe Biden's bringing to the table, because he's hardly even got his marbles with him. Don't underestimate your opponent. Don't overestimate your side. However, the media, it seems, is vastly underestimating President Trump and his ability to secure victory in this election. Truly, look, what we saw on Thursday night in the debate was a Donald Trump who was consistently highlighting his record, getting across the things that he has accomplished, which are plentiful. Later in the program, we'll talk again about what's happening with Arab countries making peace with Israel because of the leadership of President Trump, because of the new Trump strategy in the Middle East, which we've talked about more than any other program, I think, really delving into what the president's approach has been in the Middle East. And now, since we're talking Sudan and North Africa, in the Arab world broadly. And there are so many achievements, so many things to highlight that this president has accomplished, that for the media to remotely, even remotely, discount President Trump is certainly something that could well be their undoing. At the same time, we shouldn't make the same mistake, because it is the case that polls, including a lot of state polls, show Joe Biden with an advantage. We'll see how it all unfolds, of course, but the bottom line is that anything can happen here. But as for President Trump and his accomplishments, I thought Thursday night in his debate with Joe Biden really crystallized that quite well. That here you've got a president who, in less than 4 years, has accomplished a ton of things. And you've got a former United States senator for 40-something years, vice president of the United States for 8 years. I mean, President Trump highlights, you've been in government for 47 years. What have you accomplished? That's the question. And not much. And President Trump highlighted that, I thought, very effectively on a Thursday night.
But they were not in the crime bill.
But okay. Why didn't he get it done? See, it's all talk, no action with these politicians. Why didn't he get it done? That's what I'm going to do when I become president. You were vice president, along with Obama as your president, your leader, for 8 years. Why didn't you get it done? You had 8 years to get it done. Now you're saying you're going to get it done because you're all talk and no action.
You're all talk and no action, Joe. And that is coupled with President Trump consistently highlighting his success in a number of areas.
He's been in government 47 years. He never did a thing except in 1994 when he did such harm to the black community. And they were called, and he called them, super predators. And he said that. He said it, super predators. And they have never lived that down. 1994, your crime bill, the super predators. Nobody has done more for the black community than Donald Trump. And if you look, with the exception of Abraham Lincoln, possible exception, but the exception of Abraham Lincoln, nobody has done what I've done. Criminal justice reform, Obama and Joe didn't do it. I don't even think they tried because they had no chance at doing it. They might have wanted to do it, but if you had to see the arms I had to twist to get that done, it was not a pretty picture, and everybody knows it, including some very liberal people that cried in my office. They cried in the Oval Office. 2 weeks later, they're out saying, gee, we have to defeat him. Criminal justice reform, prison reform, opportunity zones with Tim Scott, a great senator from South Carolina. He came in with this incredible idea for opportunity zones. It's one of the most successful programs. People don't talk about it. Tremendous investment is being made. Biggest beneficiary, the black and Hispanic communities, and then historically black colleges and universities. After 3 years of coming to the office, I love some of those guys. They were great. They came into the office and they said, I said, what are you doing? After 3 years, I said, why do you keep coming back? Because we have no funding. I said, you don't have to come back every year. We have to come back because President Obama would never give them long-term funding. And I did. 10-year long-term funding. And I gave them more money than they asked for because they said, I think you need more. And I said, the only bad part about this is I may never see you again because I got very friendly with them and they like me and I like them. But I saved historically black colleges and universities.
Okay.
So that's President Trump highlighting. That was specifically, of course, on how he has empowered the black community. But he's highlighting accomplishments. And you juxtapose that next to Joe Biden and his record of non-achievement in 47 years of government. You juxtapose those two together, and it is absolutely clear who's the guy who's going to actually get things done. That's why I would certainly encourage President Trump in this home stretch to consistently talk about and highlight this point.
Why didn't you get it done? You had 8 years to get it done. Now you're saying you're going to get it done because you're all talk and no action.
You're all talk and no action. From the non-politician President Trump running for re-election to the career politician Joe Biden. That's stinging. Like, of all the points that came up in that debate, because of the way it progressed, because of how President Trump was able to highlight his own achievements and draw attention to Joe Biden's lack of achievements, he really scored some points with that. And I think the president needs to double down, triple down on that. Because when we look at what the American people are hoping for, they are hoping for things to get better and for leadership to actually show leadership, to actually follow through with their commitments And say what you will about President Trump, his tweets, and everything else, he has accomplished a hell of a lot. And Joe Biden hasn't. Joe Biden is not the kind of guy that we need in Washington, D.C. But President Trump can't do it alone. He hasn't done it alone. Things that he has accomplished have been through working in concert with Congress, like with criminal justice reform, or back when Republicans had control of both houses, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. He's accomplished these things with competent, effective people in positions of power, appointments to the cabinet. EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler, David Bernhardt, Colorado's own Interior Secretary, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos, Attorney General Bill Barr. And the list goes on of some tremendous appointments by President Trump to cabinet positions that have really done a lot to right the ship. You look at the record of accomplishment by these appointments in the EPA, in Interior, moving Bureau of Land Management to Colorado. They're exceptional. Time after time after time. And it's something that we need to continue. But that also means that we need Senator Cory Gardner in the United States Senate. We need Cory Gardner to remain in the United States Senate. We cannot lose that seat to the Democrats. And the nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court is a prime example of that. She was just approved by a Senate committee this past week, by the Judiciary Committee, to go to a floor vote this coming week, I think on Monday. She did a phenomenal job, by the way. But that's proof that we need Senator Cory Gardner. We'll talk more about some of these issues coming up later on in the show. We're going to take a break. When we return, we will be joined by Patrick J. Michaels, Dr. Michaels, that is, who is senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, climatologist extraordinaire, and Keith Nobles. We will talk with them both about what's happening in terms of forest fires and bad forest management as opposed to climate change. Keep it right here. It's the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We're just getting started. News Talk 710 KNUS.
Well, I don't live like a king, and I don't drive a big car. The gypsy woman was right, but she said I would go far. Just wait on time, baby. I'll be there one day. Yeah, and until I get there, baby, all I can do is hope and pray. Well, you say you stick with me, baby, stick with me through thick and thin. I know someday, baby, my bad luck has got to end. Just wait on me, baby, I'll be there one day. Yeah, and until I get there, baby, all I can do is hope and pray.
Love.
Welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. So great to be with you as always. And folks, Colorado is ablaze. It seems like it's never ending. And some will tell you that it is because of climate change, and we have not stopped climate change. And that's why we have more of these adverse weather conditions that seem to flare up here and there like forest fire expansions. And therefore, we need massive government control in order to address climate change. Again, that's why these fires, they would have you believe, are happening, is because of climate change. Yet, could it possibly be because of bad forest management? Because our forests are not being cleaned up the way that they should be? And I do literally mean, in some cases, cleaned up from trash or needles and other steps that need to be taken in order to prevent fires, certainly from getting out of control like they have. What's really going on here? And what is the situation like in Colorado's beautiful wilderness that has helped to lead to these expansions of fires across the state of Colorado? Let's talk about it with two excellent guests and good friends of the show. Dr. Patrick J. Michaels is a senior fellow in the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, as well as a senior fellow with the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. He's a past professor of environmental sciences at the University of Virginia for 30 years and Virginia's state climatologist for 27 years, and in addition is also the past president of the American Association of State Climatologists. He's written a number of books on the issue of climate change and related topics of conversation. I'm also pleased to be joined by a good friend of the show, Keith Nobles, author of the novel Our Dogs Did Not Bark, a politically incorrect dystopian tale. He is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation and an avid camper. He also has a brand new series of commentaries that you can check out on YouTube. I want to welcome both Dr. Patrick J. Michaels and Keith Nobles back to the show. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on.
Good to be here.
Good to be here, Jimmy.
Thank you both. I appreciate the time, especially because this is such a, there are so many people whose lives are being turned upside down. And Dr. Pat Michaels, we've talked about this before. There is a claim that this dryness and what we're seeing happening with not just forest fires, but also there's issues of hurricanes and other things, that it's all due to climate change. You are a noted climatologist. What say you to that point?
Well, I can tell you that when things are about a degree Celsius cooler worldwide, 100 years ago or so, if you look at U.S. fire data, the number of acres burned every year, starting around 100 years ago, was several times. I didn't say twice. I said several times as much as it is now. So in the natural world, the American West is perfectly capable of burning down large amounts of forest every year with or without climate change. And what we're seeing now dwarfs what happened before. But you know what? The problem is the conservation movement went a little bit off the rails, and it decided that unburnt forests were natural. And so we started to suppress fires. And as a result, we built up more and more fuel on the forest floor. And guess what? Also, certain pests came through, like the western pine beetle. And guess what? We have tremendous amounts of flammable material, and they really go boom once they catch fire.
So what you're describing is a change in how we approach forests and handle forests, and you didn't say a word about climate change.
No, you don't need climate change to do this. Now, the point is, yeah, sure, if it's really hot and dry, you're going to increase the potential flammability of the fuel, but in a lot of places in the West, and I'm going to bring in California here too, it gets dry every summer under unchanged climate conditions, dry enough to explode the place. So that you don't need climate change to explode the fuel as long as you have enough fuel.
Dr. Michaels, before I bring in Keith Nobles for some of the things that he has seen out in the forests and wilderness in Colorado, I want to ask you how you assess, big picture, where we are in fact at vis-a-vis climate change, because you are what you've described as a lukewarmer. What does that mean, and what are you noticing?
Well, it's clear that climate's not stationary. It changes, and that people have something to do with some of the climate change. But it's also noteworthy that we have hundreds of climate models now, or hundreds of climate model runs, and only one group of them, which is from the Russian Institute for Numerical Modeling, those models track what's happened to the climate over the last 40 years in the very important tropical regions of the planet. And we should be using those models. Now, here's the cool part. Of all the models, those models have less warming than any of them. So the lukewarm point of view is actually supported by looking at the climate models vis-a-vis the observations. So, yes, it's going to continue to warm. No, we're not going to stop it, not with anything in anything resembling the foreseeable future. And yeah, this whole notion that's going to come up, should the Democrats take control of the presidency and the Congress, that we're going to be emissions free or zero emissions in, you know, 20 or 30 years, that's just a pipe dream. Not going to happen.
Absolutely. Again, Dr. Patrick J. Michaels, climatologist extraordinaire, joining us. Also, Keith Nobles here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Keith, I wanted to bring you on because you've noticed a lot of changes over the years in terms of how our wilderness here in Colorado, which is just so beautiful, truly stunning, has been treated differently over the years. What is it that you have noticed sort of big picture?
Well, Jimmy, overall, the Forest Service has made it ever more difficult for people to access the backcountry, either for recreation or commercially, with any kind of a mechanical equipment or vehicle. They have closed many, many roads, many, many trails, all throughout most of the national forest in the West, certainly in Colorado and in California. There were a plethora of roads and trails available in, say, the Pike or Roosevelt or Arapahoe or Gunnison National Forest that are now closed off by the Forest Service. And it was possible for commercial logging to access the backcountry via these roads and trails. And it was possible for people who wanted to go cut firewood or who were camping to do so. But since there's really no access to so much of the forest now with a vehicle, what people used to do was cut a lot of deadfall, bring it home as firewood, cut down dead trees and use it for firewood if nothing else. And that's gone away to a large degree. If you drive through the forest on a forest road, one of those dirt forest roads, you may notice the forest is actually pretty clean for some distance off of that road, maybe 100 yards, because it's easy. People have kind of picked it clean. But you walk a few hundred yards back from the road into the forest, and some parts of the Colorado forest are just absolutely choked with deadfall. And we have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of acres of trees that are beetle kill, just dead trees standing. And that's what's feeding these fires, the East Troublesome Fireman, Cameron Peaks fires that we're suffering through right now.
So in that regard, what they've done is they've restricted access, and therefore a lot of the normal behaviors that people would have to reduce some of the flammable material is not allowed and happening anymore.
Yeah, well, they have, both through fees and just the logistics of it, they have continually raised the bar to people or corporations or companies being able to clean out the forest of dead fallen dead trees. They've taken a very much we're going to let this naturally occur kind of attitude. And sadly, especially with the beetle kill trees, that's just been disaster. And that's the fuel feeding these fires at the moment.
Patrick J. Michaels, what's your reaction to what Keith is saying?
Yeah, I really commend and agree with what Keith has been saying. And I'd like to ask him a question if I could.
Please.
He has knowledge on this that I don't. I published a bunch of papers in the boring refereed academic literature on pine beetles and climate way back in the day. And when I visited Colorado about 7 or 8 years ago, I hadn't been there for some time, I could see these obvious stands that were killed by western pine beetle. And I was asking myself, why do they let this fuel sit here? I mean, Keith, can you tell me what the logic has been to let those things dry out, you know, cure into perfectly fine firewood?
Nearly everyone asks the same question. The Forest Service attitude has been to take a hands-off approach, to let things be as they view it, natural. And pine beetle kills to them are natural. It's just a disastrous idea from a fire point of view. We're suffering through that management decision now. I mean, it goes along with the whole attitude of restricting vehicle access to much of the forest. I mean, you can walk in there. I do a fair amount of backpacking, and I walk into the backcountry. There are no vehicles. If there are roads, they've been closed. And there's just endless amounts of deadfall. And in some of the forests, especially the Arapaho and Roosevelt National Forest, less so in Pike and Gunnison, there's just tremendous stands of beetle kill.
Wow.
And they have decided to just let that continue, not to allow people in any practical way, not to permit the logistics for people to be able to harvest that.
You know, this is a really funny story, and it really wraps up a large portion of my life. My funding to do the pine beetle work was from the USDA Forest Service. And I built them a model, and the model showed that if you warmed up the coldest temperatures of the winter, which is what's happening, this research was done before climate change was a big deal. This research is from 1985 to 1990. You would get pine beetle explosions if the winter temperatures didn't get too cold enough to kill them. I guess they thought that was just fine research and completely disregarded it and didn't realize that you know, warming the winters would create more beetle-damaged wood.
It's stunning to hear you both talk about this. Again, we're talking with climatologists Dr. Patrick J. Michaels and Keith Nobles. Check out Keith's new channel on YouTube, Keith Nobles. And Keith, one thing that I was just so struck by, and I think this ties in, it's the same kind of story in terms of the failed forest management. Earlier this week, you posted on Facebook a story about how you cleaned up an area where you were camping and also cleaned up needles that were there. What happened, and how do you think this might relate to what we're talking about in terms of dead wood and pine beetles and so forth?
Well, yeah, it was a disappointing story, to say the least. I pulled into a campsite Sunday morning as some other people were pulling out. This was dispersed camping in the forest, not in the campground, just dispersed camping. And there was a trailer across the way, maybe 100 yards, that was absolutely surrounded by trash. And they had not seen the people who were leaving as I was arriving, had not seen anybody, and they said they were going to call the sheriff's office, which they did. A short time later, two deputies showed up, said that legally they couldn't remove any property from National Forest land, but they left a note on the trailer door for the people associated with the trailer to pick up their trash and leave. Well, later that night, those people indeed came back, and the sheriff's note, deputy sheriff's note, must have put the fear of God in them, because they packed up and left in a hurry. I'm guessing they did not want law enforcement attention. And the Forest Service came by, and there were needles and trash there. And I asked them if they were going to clean it up. And they said, "Well, maybe we'll come back tomorrow." And I volunteered my services. "I'll help you pick it up if you haul it away." And they said, "Maybe tomorrow." Of course, they did not come back tomorrow. So at the end of the next day, I went over and gathered up the needles, dug a deep hole in the forest, and I buried these needles. They were obviously from drug abuse, and there were about 10 of these needles scattered on the ground in this campsite out in the forest, which seemed like a very bad idea to leave them there. But it was disappointing the Forest Service wouldn't at least pick up the needles and take them.
That, to me, Keith, just seems like an absolute failure of action on the part of those who were supposed to be, supposedly at least, protecting our environment. Like, literally, the Forest Service. And of course, individuals who should be taking responsibility for throwing away their own trash, and if they're going to be using needles, I guess, throwing away, removing their own needles. But you shouldn't have had to do that.
No, I shouldn't have. And it really wasn't that big a deal. Dig a hole, gather up needles, bury them.
Right.
It wasn't like, you know, but yeah, just what are we paying these people for?
It seems like part of a larger policy problem, though, and a larger problem of bad actions on the part of many of these agencies. Keith.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it just raises a question. The forests are burning. They won't remove or allow people to remove or make it very difficult for people to remove deadfall, to remove beetle kill trees that are still standing, and they won't pick up needles. It's like, well, I'm trying to collect money from you for various things. What are you here for?
You know, Dr. Patrick J. Michaels, one thing to me that is so striking about the blame climate change game that we're seeing in terms of these forest fires in Colorado, California, around the country, is that it seems to be more of let's push off responsibility from bad policy and poor actions on the part of government agencies that are literally obliged to, by statute, oversee these different areas of our environment. And instead of taking responsibility and trying to change forest management policy, they're just saying, oh, it's climate change and we need to restrict emissions and this and that.
Which they know won't happen. Yeah, that is the point. That is the irresponsible excuse to explain away bad management. I mean, I am no raving Trump supporter by any stretch of the imagination. But in the one debate that we had when the subject of that came up, he was correct in blaming the fires in California largely on the management of the forest.
Yes.
One interesting thing I've seen is the legacy media, namely NBC and MSNBC, actually turned out ultimately to agree with him. One of the very few things they do, that this is a management problem much more than it's a weather problem.
Yeah,
but it bothers me that these agencies use climate change as an excuse. And I can tell you one thing. This is something a little birdie told me. If there's a second term, I think that the official view of climate change is not going to allow these agencies to do that anymore.
That seems like the sensible first step. Just the first step, but the very first step that needs to be taken, Pat Michaels, especially. It's a mindset shift, because if you have a certain line of thinking that is underlying these policies, then you're going to continue to get the bad policies.
Yeah. Bad policy begets bad policy.
Mm. Keith Nobles, what do you think needs to be done in terms of shifting the policy, and then also like what we should be seeing as opposed to what we're seeing now?
Well, if I had to make a recommendation for a policy change, I would reopen these roads and trails in the forest that they have closed.
Mm.
Allow people in there with their pickup trucks to and their chainsaws to cut and haul the deadfall out. And I would find a way to make it attractive to commercial enterprises to come cut the beetle kill trees and harvest those for firewood or whatever else they may be able to do with them. I mean, the problem here is, like I said, logistically and cost-wise, the Forest Service has elevated the cost of doing this to a point it's not worth on a commercial basis. You can't make a profit. And on an individual basis, nobody's going to haul out a pickup truck of firewood a mile or two through the forest by hand. That's not practical. And they just sealed off so much of a forest to being available, to being harvested in this way. And we're just paying the price for it now.
Isn't it interesting, Dr. Pat Michaels, and we just have a little over a minute left here, how what Keith is saying is that if you allow people to actually act in their own self-interest, that it can directly benefit the environment and communities that are falling prey to these ever-expanding wildfires.
Well, absolutely. That's true. if people had cleaned up the stuff on the forest floor around Paradise, California, you wouldn't have had that absolutely tragic fire. That fire was caused by people. It wasn't caused by climate change. It wasn't caused by weather. It was caused by people's bad management of that forest.
Keith Nobles, a final thought from you, my friend.
25 years ago in the Pike National Forest, I would regularly take a pickup truck and a chainsaw, access the backcountry, and for a $10 permit, I could cut a pickup truck load worth of deadfall and haul it away. And lots of people did that. And it's not that you can't do that anymore. It's that you can't access the places where the deadfall is plentiful anymore. There's just not physical access in the vehicle.
Wow.
So people are not taking that deadfall out anymore.
That's just stunning. I mean, it's unfortunately, and I'll give you the last word, Dr. Michaels, I'm not surprised, but it is deeply sad and tragic, especially because we are seeing the real world consequences, and then they try to pawn it off on climate change.
Yeah, the sad part is that this all comes from, I think, the tragedy of noble intent. You know, the whole notion that if we let forests be, quote, natural, that everything's going to be fine, and that's the way we should do things, and that we're not going to allow people to come in there and pull out the dead wood and clean it up. We're not going to clean it up. The unintended consequences of that, has been conflagration.
I think that is a very somber but pointed note to end on. Dr. Patrick J. Michaels, Senior Fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the CO2 Coalition, and Keith Nobles, thank you both so much for joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks a lot, Jimmy. Great show.
Thank you. And be sure to check out Keith Nobles' new commentary series on YouTube. All right, that's it for the first hour of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. When we come back, I'm going to speak with a 2016 Bernie delegate to the DNC. He's going to come on and talk to me about why he has flipped to Trump 100%. Donald J. Trump. It is a walk-away story you do not want to miss. Keep it right here, 710 KNUS.